The Reclaiming America for Christ radio network is on the air. Stay tuned for today's Heartland Nation with Pastor Bruce DeLay.
Sing a song about the heartland, the only place I feel at home. Sing about the way a good man works until the daylight's gone.
Good evening, Boston, and welcome to your Tuesday evening, June 16, year of our Lord, 2015. This is Bruce DeLay. You're listening to the Heartland Nation program. Glad to have you this evening. Sit back, put your thinking cap on, you know, open your Bible, work with me a little bit here, will you? Okay. We're going to talk about several interesting things tonight. Of course, this weekend we have coming up Father's Day. And we're going to talk a little bit about fathers and maybe some areas that you're not familiar with that are be something new about fathers. One is the Father Abraham speech. Have you ever heard of that? Did you know this is part of our national history, the heritage of the United States of America, the heritage of the 13 colonies, and what led up to us telling King George to go jump in the lake? I mean, this is a big part of it. Have you ever heard of the Father Abraham speech? Well, many people have not, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. We're going to use that as a springboard to get to probably the meaty topic this evening, which deals with the fact we're all waiting for the dropping of the gavel from on high, you know, up at the U.S. Supreme Court regarding same-sex, quote-unquote, marriage. Yeah. That's what we're all waiting on. All waiting for, you know, some unelected people. And it boils down to one, because you'll have four justices on one side. You'll have four justices on the other side of the issue. And then you'll have Kennedy right in the middle. And so what we have now is a system in our country where one guy, unelected, appointed for life, gets to decide the fate of our country. And when you look at it in those terms, and you look at it in light of the fact that what he decides could very well bring the judgment of God upon our country, Roe v. Wade in 1973 was strike one. If America falls to the lunacy of equating homosexual sexual relations with the bonds of matrimony and marriage, you know, one man, one woman for life, reproduction, the building block of society and civilization. You remember that? Yeah, if we equate the two and fall for that, it's going to be strike two on America. It's going to be shaking our fist in the face of our Creator God, who said, "I created you male and female. Created I you?" Yeah, well, not so much, God. I guess we have become God, and we begin to fancy ourselves as our own gods. Is that it? Well, apparently so, and a lot is riding on this Supreme Court decision. Therefore, a lot is riding on the morals and the decision of one man, Mr. Kennedy. And I don't know. I just don't like putting all my marbles in that bag. Do you? I don't think our founders ever intended that, and we'll talk about that. How we have devolved from what the founders established to what we have today, which is an elite ruling class ruling largely now by executive order and largely by judicial fiat instead of by a three-pronged system that ultimately is ruled by we the people whom they represent. When you figure that less than 2% of people in America are actually homosexuals, that's not a Christian statistic. That's put out by the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. The CDC said that it's only 1 point something. I can't even remember, but basically a minuscule number. And so now we have not even the tail wagging the dog in America. We have a hair on the tail, wagging the tail, and then the tail wagging the dog. That's what we've got. I personally want my country back. Would you just say that with me, please? Let's have a little therapy here, okay? Say this with me. I want my country back. I want my country back. Now say it with a little passion. I want my country back. Folks, this is where we have to draw the line, and some people have, including Dr. James Dobson, including many other Christian leaders across the nation. Franklin Graham is another, and they are signing a document called Defend Marriage. Some 43,000 so far, I believe, have signed. These are Christian leaders, pastors, ministers of all kinds. I've signed this thing. We'll talk about this effort and the fact that some very well-known and very established Christian leaders are saying, you know what? Whatever you decide, if you decide the wrong direction on this, we will not comply. And we're telling you ahead of time, we're not going to marry people based on your laws because they offend God. These are not under God, and therefore, they're disqualified. If law becomes corrupt and does not even go by its own laws, if the people running the country are not even going by their own legal standards and they're just running roughshod over things and you know citing case law over constitutional law and so forth, there's many techniques that they employ, but if this is what we have, then we are no longer have a nation under God. And let's face it, all authority in heaven and earth has been given unto me, Jesus said. Therefore you go. The principle of authority is that all authority is delegated from God. And if it's not delegated from God, it does not duly constituted authority. Therefore, we have the right to say, you know what, the consent of the governed is going away. We don't consent to be governed by that. So here we are today, the Tuesday before Father's Day weekend, the Tuesday before we anticipate sometime between now and the end of the month, the Supreme Court coming out with whatever they're going to hand down to us. So let's start this evening by talking about something I mentioned, the Father Abraham speech. Have you ever heard of it? Here as we sit, anticipating Father's Day this weekend, it's a pretty important piece of Americana. You see, in 1758, Benjamin Meacham published a very important document called Father Abraham's Speech. Now, this was a compilation of over 25 years of Benjamin Franklin's insights and his, wisdom, his little witty sayings and so forth that he had compiled in his writings and publications. So in 1758, this document came out, and it was a kind of a fictional speech given by Father Abraham, supposedly, asking some of the following questions. Pray, Father Abraham, what think you of the times? And so Father Abraham would answer what he thinks of the times. Won't the heavy taxes quite ruin the country, Father Abraham? He had to answer that one. How will we ever be able to pay these taxes? What would you advise us to do, Father Abraham? It was 24 pages long, and this document, believe it or not, this document is credited as one of the things that brought the colonies to the point that they would actually stand up and do something about their situation with the oppression coming from King George and Great Britain. This is also called the Way to Wealth. Some of the things that Benjamin Franklin said that are quoted in this document are little, witty sayings like, for instance, quote, there are no gains without pains. You thought that was a new thing. No pain, no gain. No, that came from Benjamin Franklin in Father Abraham's speech. There are no gains without pains. He's talking about financial things in particular, and he's talking about saving. He's talking about not spending money on things that you shouldn't, and therefore you're not going to have any gains financially unless you have some pains. You hold off doing things you want to do in order to do the things you should do, things like that. These are concepts to teach the children. And so Father Abraham, isn't it interesting that our founding fathers, our original 13 colonies, they recognized who Father Abraham was. Today, if you went out a man on the street, interview and talk to people, they probably wouldn't have a clue as to who Father Abraham is. But our country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and on the Old and New Testaments of the Bible. Therefore, the colonists would know exactly who Father Abraham is, and they would associate him with faith and with wisdom. And so Benjamin Franklin used that to communicate. There's another one of his little sayings, one today is worth two tomorrows. So you better use today because it's more valuable than two tomorrows. Here's another one, a life of leisure and a life of laziness are two things. So he does not equate leisure and laziness. If you work hard, you get some time off, you get some leisure. If you're lazy, you don't, things just pile up. Here's another one, quote, get what you can and what you get, hold. It sounds like a principle from the scriptures, occupy till I come. Take the land and then hold the land. Here's another one, sloth, like rust, consumes faster than labor wears, while the used key is always bright. If you use something a lot, it's not going to get rust on it. I think that's maybe equates to today's phrase, use it or lose it. Here's another one. Have you somewhat to do tomorrow? Do it today. Unquote. Benjamin Franklin from Father Abraham's speech to the children. Okay. The eye of a master will do more work than both his hands. Interesting. That would fall into the category of work smart rather than working as hard. Work smart. It'd be like, measure twice and cut the board only once. Okay? Yeah, that's smart. We used to teach the kids wisdom. We used to teach them things that they could actually use in life. Today, we teach them how to play video games and do things that, quite frankly, if technology ever goes down, if energy and the technological ability to have so much Wi-Fi and cell phone towers and so forth. If anything ever happens, one little hiccup on the sun, could disrupt all of our technology on the earth, among other things that could happen. So we should be teaching our children things that they can do with their hands. We should be teaching them skills and the ability to survive and so forth, aside from all of the technology that they know almost exclusively. That's what they know. Here's another one from Ben Franklin, quoted in Father Abraham's speech. Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Wow. Of course, hard work and a lack of slothfulness and laziness will get you somewhere in life. That is still true today. And this Father Abraham's speech, as it was called, it actually began to show the colonists, young and old, not just the children, young and old, that guess what? King George is causing us to not be able to fulfill any of these wisdoms, any of these statements that have so much value. We can't do these things because we're getting taxed out of our mind. We're getting taxed right out of our businesses, and we simply cannot survive. And so some say that it was Father Abraham's speech, a compilation of many of Benjamin Franklin's writings over 25 years, published and printed in 1758, that actually is responsible for causing people to start thinking, we've got to do something. It's time. It's time to rise up. It's time to be we the people. Interesting bit of history, I think. Now, we await. I hope it's not depraved. They're considering a depraved subject, but I hope the decision itself is not depraved. We await the dropping of the gavel from on high up at the Supreme Court regarding same-sex marriage. I can't believe America is at this point, but we are. Now, I want you to consider for just a moment the fact that when the federal government was established, first of all, it has certain enumerated powers. In other words, the people put certain handcuffs on the federal government and say, you can do this much, but you can't go any farther than that. You can do no more. And they tied their hands when it comes to most things. Some people say the enumerated powers add up to 17. I'll read these to you in a few minutes. It's about that amount, 17, 18, and some other things that are broke down into different categories. But actually, none of it by far matches up with what they're doing today. The amount of overreach, the amount of, the expression of, you might say, a federal monarchy across the country, when that's never how it was intended. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court, which we are watching with bated breath right now, is supposed to really be a part of a three-pronged federal government. In other words, today it has somehow evolved, or I would say devolved, into becoming the end-all. If the Supreme Court rules this way or that way, that's just the way it is. It was supposed to be ruling on matters of federal government and the three-pronged stool, of the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches of the federal government. We have 50 sovereign states now. Each one of those states has its own constitution, has its own legislature, its own executive, its own Supreme Court, has its own capital, has its own procedures, has its own boundaries, sovereign lines that outline the sovereign boundaries of that state. So why do we just accept the fact that it seems to be the news media accepts it, everybody else just goes along with it, that somehow when the Supreme Court decides something, that's it. And so now we have 9 Supreme Court justices, 4 that will likely fall on the conservative side of the question regarding same-sex quote-unquote marriage, and 4 that will fall most likely on the liberal side of that decision, and 1 in the middle, Justice Kennedy, that, he can go either way. He can swing both ways, man. That's how he has ruled in the past. And so everyone's waiting. What it is boiled down to then is you have one life-appointed Supreme Court justice making a decision for everybody in these United States, some 330 million of us. When did things change and Washington become, the seat of a monarchy, and all we have out here in our 50 states are just branch offices of the federal government? Well, Oklahoma, is just a branch of the federal government, and they tell us what to do, and then they call up the office here at our capital and tell us what to tell the people to do, and they tell us, and they make our laws. Is that how this thing is supposed to work? Well, of course not. Never has. We have allowed this. We have acquiesced to our own demise in this country. And so now we have this elite, this unelected, appointed, lifetime judge, single-handedly, most likely, going to make a decision on what's probably going to be a strike 2 on America. Roe v. Wade and the slaughter of millions and millions of babies being strike 1. Same-sex marriage codified. Look, even the Roman Empire, when you read Romans chapter 1, homosexuality began to proliferate and become accepted, and the society, celebrated it and all that. And guess what happened to the Roman Empire? That was a signpost, as old Rod Serling back in Twilight Zone days might say. It's a signpost up ahead. Yeah, the fall of the Roman Empire. This is just a sign and a wonder. Yeah, when you elevate homosexuality to something to be celebrated and et cetera, it will take the country down. Oh, no, America has gone farther than Rome now. They never equated homosexual behavior with marriage. They never codified it into law that, I don't want to use names because I don't want to insult anyone, but Joe and John or whatever can be husband and wife, and somehow that is legal now, and if you don't like it, then you get persecuted? Well, that's where we are, folks. That's the sad state of affairs, waiting for the gavel to drop for somebody to tell us what our life is going to be like. Now, let me remind you of the way it's supposed to be. Do you remember a little phrase called the enumerated powers? Now before I start reading this, let me just remind you that some Christian leaders are signing this petition. I've signed it. I've made the public. My name is on there, out there for whatever list I might get on and all. I'm sure I'm on lists already, so it doesn't matter. But it's called defendmarriage.org, defendmarriage.org. Real marriage, not quote-unquote marriage, but real marriage, defend marriage. I signed up along with, over 40,000 other Christian leaders who say basically, in a nutshell, I'll read some of the information to you here in a moment, but basically they're saying, guess what? We won't comply. We're not going to be a part of this. You know, if you do this, then you basically are going over a line, and it has come to the point where we do not consent to be governed by you in, you know, X, Y, and Z, one of them being this matter of marriage. Just because the state says it's legal doesn't mean I'm going to marry a guy and a guy or a girl and a girl. It's not going to happen. You can't force me to. I mean, I guess they can throw you in jail or they can do something to you, but, you know, I'd rather obey God than you, as Peter and John said in the book of Acts. Yeah. So, here we are. Now, let me remind you how it's supposed to work, okay? Not how it is operating today, but how it's supposed to work. That is that in the U.S. Constitution, we the people created the federal government. It's our creature. In other words, we have power over it, not the other way around. We delegated power from our Constitution to the federal government. Don't you understand? We created the federal government. The states did, not the other way around. It's not like, I think we get this idea because they put the United States flag on top of the flagpole and then your state flag directly underneath. And we have always been conditioned to see things that somehow the federal government is on the top. And that's just not true. Not when it comes to the order of creation, not when it comes to sovereignty. The federal government has three branches. Article 1 of the Constitution creates the legislative branch, both sides of Congress, and lists its powers. Article 2 creates the executive branch and lists its powers, the president. And then Article 3 creates the judicial branch, the federal courts, and lists their powers. Now, this article from freedomoutpost.com stresses the fact that Congress is not authorized to pass any law on any subject just because a majority in the Congress think that the law is a good idea. Instead, the areas in which the Congress is authorized to act are strictly limited and defined, as I use the term, as enumerated. In Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 1 to 16, delegates, we find the powers that are delegated to Congress. Okay, let's go down this little list. Number one, Congress is delegated the power to lay certain taxes so they can tax the people in certain areas. Number two, to pay the debts of the United States. Yeah, well, I think as we read this, we can judge how the federal government is doing. Are they doing a good job or are they doing a bad job? Well, let's see. The second thing they have to do is pay the debts of the United States. How well are they doing that? They're taxing us beyond tolerance, even as in the colonies, and yet they're not even paying off the debts of the United States. Well, before I commentate anymore, let's just keep going. Another thing that they are given the power, delegated the power by the people to do under the Constitution is to declare war and make rules of warfare, to raise and support armies and a navy, and to make rules governing the military forces, to call forth the militia for certain purposes, and to make rules governing the militia. Well, we have the current occupant of the White House, sending our Air Force to bomb Gaddafi into submission in Libya. That was not a declared war. We have all, that's just one tiny example. We have now the use of our military without going through Congress and so forth. Look, it's the very things they're supposed to be doing are some of the worst things they're not doing at all. And if they're not doing that and they're spending all their time with their nose in our personal business and the state's business and things, this thing is upside down, people. Number four, they have been delegated the authority to the enumerated power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the states and with the Indian tribes. I think our Congress just sent a very strong message to the president. They did not go for Obama trade, and that was a slap in the face. Now he's mad. He's going to try to, you know, get back at them, I suppose. And it's just, you know, a friend of mine in our church the other day, a guy named Sam, he's just a country guy. He's not highly educated or anything. But here's how Sam described our current political situation. He said, well, he says to me, he says, it's just championship wrestling. I said, what? Well, he said, oh, yeah. He said he went down the list of different guys from the old days of, remember, championship wrestling, The Sheik and Gorgeous George, and I guess all these guys. I mean, there was a bunch of characters. And he listed a bunch. He said, yeah, they would get together and they'd decide which one was going to be the good guy and which one was going to be the bad guy this week and who was going to win. And it was all figured out ahead of time. This is how America views the Republicans and Democrats in the Congress. And, you know, against this administration and so forth, it's pretty much the truth. It's championship wrestling, people. That's all it is. All right, so we're supposed to regulate, the federal government is supposed to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the states and with Indian tribes. Well, we're sending jobs overseas. We're regulating jobs here in America out of business. There is an agenda, a global agenda, to beat down America and to establish some sort of communist share the wealth type of situation. And the little guy and the guy with, you know, a startup business and so forth, he's not going to be able to make it under these regulations. This is what they've been doing for years. Sticking their nose in other people's business instead of just regulating commerce with foreign nations and so forth. You're making it a favored thing. You're making international trade favored over trade here in the United States. You're making imports favored over exports, which is where we make our money. Hello. So, gosh, Father Abraham needs to make another speech, I'm just thinking. Here's another thing. This is number five on the enumerated powers list. Congress and the federal government has the enumerated power to establish uniform rules of naturalization, what we might call immigration. Now, we'll talk about that. There's another one on that here in a minute down the list, but again, failure. We're not doing this. We're not establishing uniform rules of naturalization. We are making people wait in line, pay tens of thousands of dollars, and jump through hoops, while other people are just sneaking right across and being handed an education, being handed medical attention, being handed food stamps. It's unbelievable. You get penalized for going the right way. You get penalized for obeying the rules. You get rewarded for breaking the rules. Can somebody please explain this to me other than it's wrong and people need to go to jail and we need to push the pause button on this this overspending, overzealous government that is, you know, taking over our country? It's a takeover from the inside, basically. That's what I see. All right, enumerated power number six. The federal government was, delegated the power to establish uniform laws on bankruptcies. Number seven, to coin money and regulate the value thereof. Okay? Coin money, not print money. This deals with silver and gold, and we've long passed that that standard long ago. I mean, when you really start reading these things, it can get depressing. You've got to hold on to your faith in the Word of God and to the promises of the Lord. I mean, you've got to hang on because, folks, America, as we have known it, is not only just over, it's been over for a while, and we're just waking up to it. Number eight, the federal government has the enumerated power to fix the standard of weights and measures. Well, hallelujah, we're not on the metric system. We're on inches instead of meters. And so, I mean, okay, I get that. They're trying to change that now. Number nine, to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting. Well, maybe they should start punishing the people who are printing money hand over fist. I know that's legal now to do that. If I do it, it's counterfeiting. If the Fed does it, it's, helping us, I guess. All right, enumerated power number 10, to establish post offices and post roads. Have you checked into the post office lately? It is a terrible failure. I'm not blaming the postman, and I'm not blaming the people that work for the post office. I'm just saying that's another failure right there, number 10. Number 11, to issue patents and copyrights. Okay, that's fine. I don't see the federal government really focusing a lot on the things they should be, like patents and copyrights. To create courts inferior to the Supreme Court, and to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the laws of nations. That's number 13. Other provisions, our Constitution delegates to Congress powers over the country to kind of at large to make laws regarding. Here's a couple others. This is where I told you it kind of breaks down in some areas. An enumeration of the population for purposes of apportionment of representatives and direct taxes. Okay, they have to know how many people live in a district in order to what's the district's lines so that we can have adequate representation and so forth. Well, that's now being played with, and gerrymandering goes on. And when corruption is there, it's going to get its fingers into every pie that it possibly can. And now it's even into this 14th enumerated power, dealing with the population for purposes of apportionment of representatives and directing taxes. Number 15, elections of senators and representatives and their pay. Have you looked at what they make lately? If you are a senator or representative, you're making more money than most folks. Let me just put it that way. And then you get that money for life. Okay? And then how is it like a Dennis Hastert, a high school wrestling coach, who becomes a politician? How is it that this guy, when they begin to dig up the dirt on his pedophilia and find out he's paying people millions of dollars and moving money around as payoffs, how does a guy who makes a salary of a high school wrestling coach and a politician, how does he have millions of dollars to pay people off with? How does that work? Oh, the only possible answer is that these people are bought and paid for, folks. These folks that we think are representing us, they're bought and paid for by somebody with lots of money, lots of influence. And I'm sure the identity of those people vary, widely. Here's another one. After 1808, to prohibit the importation of slaves. Thank you very much. That was 1808, by the way. Did you know that in the original documents, they said all men are created equal? And there was a strong faction in the colonies to reject slavery. It took from then until the Civil War, but even in 1808, they were to prohibit importation of slaves. I don't know how good of a job they did. If they'd have cut it off in 1808, we probably wouldn't have had the Civil War. After 1808, to restrict migration. There's the other part, immigration to these United States. We're supposed to restrict it. We don't need the lifeboat of the world being swamped by people we don't even know who they are. We need it to be regulated. Immigration, migration, and all whatever words you want to use here. That was supposed to be number 17. They are desperately and terribly failing at all immigration enforcement and so forth. Oh, my gosh. We can't even secure our own southern border. Anybody who tells you that is lying to you. I've been there multiple times. It is a lie to say, as Janet Reno, Janet Reno said it too. Janet Reno's little sister, Napolitano, she said, Oh, the border is more secure now than it's ever been. Right, right. Tell that to the folks that live there. Tell that to the folks who deal with it on a daily basis. Tell that to the Border Patrol officers. They know better. Number 18, a restricted power to suspend writs of habeas corpus. Number 19, to revise and control imposts or duties on imports or exports which may be laid by states. So, you know, they want to get in between the states and international trade. I get that. Number 20, a restricted power to declare the punishment of treason. That's interesting. They get a restricted power to declare punishment on something that might happen on them. Okay. So if the president is guilty of treason, then the federal government has a restricted power to declare the punishment of treason. I don't know if that's such a good idea, but there it is. Number 21, an implementation of the full faith and credit clause. Okay. And number 22, procedures for amendments to the Constitution. So if there's enough, a lot of procedures to have to jump through, hoops to jump through, but they can oversee amendments to the Constitution. As we know, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, 19th, 23rd, 24th, and 26th Amendments did a lot of things. And they basically fall into these four categories real quickly. International relations, commerce, and war, number one. Number two, control immigration by restricting who may come to these United States and establish a uniform rule of naturalization of new citizens. That ain't happening. Hasn't been happening for a long time. Number three, domestically, to establish a uniform commercial system, weights and measures, patents, copyrights, a monetary system based on gold and silver. Thank you very much. Bankruptcy law, a limited power over interstate commerce and mail delivery. And then number four category, and in some amendments, to protect certain civil and certain voting rights. Well, there you have it. This is the enumerated powers that our Congress, our federal government has, and yet they seem to insist on overreaching these powers and telling us somewhere in the Constitution it says that a dude can marry a dude and they should have all the same consideration, and it's the same thing as a man marrying a woman. I can't find it in there. I can't find it, especially in their enumerated powers part, you know, that they even have, you know, the liberty to deal with. But it is, it's obviously true. It's unconstitutional to say anything else, right? Well, there's a lot of folks that agree with me and disagree with them. Again, Dr. James Dobson, Franklin Graham, are saying to the Supremes, if you make us choose, don't force us to choose, but if you come down on the side of same-sex marriage in this Supreme Court decision, you're going to force us to choose. And when you force us to choose, we're going to choose the law of God over the law of the state. That's what this whole defendmarriage.org effort is. Let me just read to you a little bit of the article. Prominent Christian and Jewish leaders are warning the U.S. Supreme Court in a full-page ad in major newspapers that they will not honor any decision that violates the biblical understanding of marriage as solely the union of one man and one woman, unquote. The statement by the leaders, including Franklin Graham, James Dobson, Don Wildman, General Jerry Boykin, Alveda King, Alan Keyes, and many, many others, appears in a full-page ad in the Washington Post, USA Today, and other newspapers. We affirm that marriage as existing solely between one man and one woman precedes civil government. It was that way before America was ever founded, okay? Though affirmed, fulfilled, and elevated by faith, the truth that marriage can exist only between one man and one woman is not based solely on religion, but on the natural law written on the human heart, these leaders say in the ad. And, of course, I wholeheartedly agree. I signed on to this myself. My name's on the list. We implore this court to not step outside of its legitimate authority, that's out of the enumerated powers I just listed, and unleash religious persecution and discrimination against people of faith. We will be forced to choose between the state and our conscience, which is informed by clear biblical and church doctrine and the natural created order, unquote. Well, these people don't even believe there's a creator. So they're not going to believe in the Bible. They're not going to believe in the church. They're not going to believe in natural order. I mean, you've been exposed to the information. I mean, we have people now who say, well, you know, I'm not black. I was born white, but I want to be black. I see myself as being black. So I'm going to be a transracial person. I'm going to live as a black person, even though I'm DNA and all that tells me I'm a white person. Remember this lady in charge of the NAACP out in Idaho? I mean, this is wacky. Now we've had Bruce Jenner. He says, I feel like a woman or whatever. And so he says, you know, I want to be a girl, and therefore I am a girl. If I say it enough, maybe that'll change it. But transgender, yeah. So I guess if you can have transgender, you could have transracial, right? And then whatever else could you have? Man, I think I'm an NFL linebacker. I want to get my $1 million. Okay? I want to be on the roster. I want to be out there for at least one play, and then I want to collect and, I'll get an injury most likely on that one play, and then, hey, I'm set for life. Is that just because I think I am? Should I be able to do anything I want and be anyone and have any identity I feel like? Well, of course not. That's called, quite frankly, a mental illness. Okay? Now, as a matter of fact, it wasn't that long ago that homosexuality was considered a mental illness. And they got that, you know, taken out of the books. But by the way, I just have to mention, in connection with Bruce Jenner, Dr. Paul McHugh, a former psychiatrist in chief for Johns Hopkins Hospital. Yeah, this is some fringe guy, some wing nut, just the former psychiatrist in chief for Johns Hopkins Hospital. He has an opinion about former Olympic athlete Bruce Jenner and his announcement that he's now wants you to call him by a different name and so forth. He not only believes that changing sexes is biologically impossible. Hello, he's a medical professional. He understands that. Whatever you do, you can't change your gender. It's impossible to change it. You are who God created you to be. You know, you got to get your mind right. That's the real issue. The issue is a problem upstairs, not a problem downstairs. He says not only does he believe that changing sexes is biologically impossible. Hey, I'm not even a doctor, and I knew that. But he says he also believes that those identifying themselves as transgender actually have a mental disorder. There, he said it. He said it. Former head of Johns Hopkins University or hospital psychiatric school, okay? All right. This is in the Wall Street Journal and so forth. He's the author, by the way, this guy's the author of 6 books and over 125 peer-reviewed medical journal articles. He says that surgery is not a solution for those wishing to live as the opposite sex. Okay, well, I'm just trying to say, just because you think something doesn't make it so. I hate to tell you, you know, maybe mommy said when you were a little kid that if you wanted to be a star, you're going to be a star. But not everybody, you know, is a big shot in life. Some people work for a living, whatever. I mean, you got to come to reality and do the best you can, get the most out of life, enjoy yourself, enjoy your life. But folks, if I think I'm a black person, I'm not. It doesn't make me a black person. If I think I'm a female, it doesn't make me a female. Now, as we're looking at it, if I think that male on male or female on female is marriage, that doesn't make it so. And these Christian leaders across the country are signing up together and saying, we're not going to just do the bidding of the state and marry people that we don't think it's right to marry. Here's their conclusion. It says, we will not honor any decision by the Supreme Court which will force us to violate clear biblical understanding of marriage. That's pretty straightforward, I'd say. Two of the justices, by the way, Elena Kagan and Ruth Ginsburg, already have publicly advocated for same-sex marriage by performing ceremonies themselves, but have refused to recuse themselves on this case of deciding same-sex marriage in America. I guess you should line up if you want to get married. You should line up on Kagan and Ginsburg. They'll do it. I won't do it. Franklin Graham won't do it. A whole list, you know, Dr. James Dobson, a whole list of people aren't going to do it. But these two will. Many analysts expect the Supreme Court by a narrow margin to find a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. They're already saying it's probably going to happen. It's already recognized in about three dozen states, most of which have been ordered by federal judges to take that final step. Now, in Mexico, they're sitting there, they decided, and they're saying, why are you in America still deliberating? We are, well, we got to keep up with Mexico, don't we? Well, in only one state, by the way, I want to just say I spent my vacation money in the state of Alabama. Beautiful Dauphin Island. I can highly recommend that you go to Dauphin Island or any other place in the beautiful state of Alabama. Spend your vacation dollars, will you? Support the state of Alabama. Because only in this one state has there been significant resistance. The state Supreme Court there ordered officials who issue marriage licenses to follow the state constitution and issue them only to male and female couples. This is after, you know, the federal government said, oh, no, go ahead, and now you have to do it. And the Supreme Court in Alabama said, stop, whoa, right there, that's it. No, only order, only issue marriage licenses to opposite-sex couples. Now, the ad states that, quote, we, the undersigned, have joined together to present our unified message and plea to the justices of the United States Supreme Court regarding the matter of marriage. This is the overall Christian petition to the Supreme Court justices. We are Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox Christian pastors, clergy, lay leaders, Jewish leaders who collectively represent millions of people in our specific churches, parishes, denominations, synagogues, and media ministry outreaches. They describe anything other than biblical marriage as, quote, an unjust law, as Martin Luther King Jr. described such laws in his letter from the Birmingham jail. Again, in Alabama, interestingly enough, back in that day. They said that they will choose the Bible. I say they, it's me, it's we. I'm on the list. I signed the thing. Hey, we say we will choose the Bible. On this choice, we must pledge obedience to our Creator. While there are many things we can endure, you know, about civil government, any attempt to redefine marriage is a line we cannot and will not cross, unquote. They refer everyone to go to defendmarriage.org, where tens of thousands of Americans have already signed a related pledge. Signers include, I think I mentioned Dobson, I mentioned Franklin Graham, Paul Blair is on the list, from Reclaiming America for Christ. Let's see. Oh, Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, you know, the Harbinger, he's on the list. Yeah, he signed up. Tom DeLay, my distant relative, former congressman from the Houston area. Yeah, he's on the list. You got Pastor John Hagee. A lot of people know who John Hagee is from San Antonio, Cornerstone Church. He's on the list. A lot of people know Calvary Chapel, Pastor Jack Hibbs, he's on the list. E.W. Jackson, it's not just a white thing. It's a black thing. It's a white thing. It's a multiracial thing. It's a Christian thing. It's a born again, born from above thing. It doesn't matter your ethnicity. You can sign this if you believe that God is our Creator and He created us a certain way. Pastor Rick Scarborough from Vision America, the list and the beat goes on. Now, this is quite an impressive show of unity and a show of political force. You know, we're going to talk to people. We're going to expose this kind of stuff. And people who are running for office, whether it's local, state, federal, whatever it is, they're going to bear the political weight of this decision on their next election. And by the way, just to simplify things, I think I'll mention that rightwingnews.com, they are reporting that today's advocates of abortion are so extreme that there are no limits to which they'll agree to abortion. Example, listen to this. This simplifies for your next time you go down to vote. Every Democrat in the Senate, U.S. Senate, voted in favor of a bill that would allow abortion up to 9 months of pregnancy. Late-term abortion. I mean late-term, right up to birth. All the Democrats in the Senate were on board with that. Kill the child just before it can be born and take a breath. You got children? Do you have grandchildren? Do you ever see a baby? You ever live life? You ever know that this is just flat out wrong? Abortion is a sin. It is murder. And now all of the Senate members on the Democrat side voted for late-term abortion up to 9 months. Folks, these lines are drawn. This is not a hard decision. If they're making us choose between God and them, look, I'm choosing God, and I will stand by that. I will live and die by that. I'm no pushover. I'm not just going to lay down and let you take my country. Matter of fact, I want my country back. But in the process of that, it is not Christian. It's not honorable to lay down and let evil take over the world. That is not what God told us to do. He said, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. We're supposed to submit to God and then be salt and light in this dark world and fight for righteousness. This is what our founders did. This is what we are to do. This is Bruce DeLay. You've been listening to the Tuesday night edition of Heartland Nation right here on WROL 950. Now, I must say, this is one of our last broadcasts. At the end of this month, the entire programming of Reclaiming America for Christ, Dan Zimmerle and Paul Blair and all the rest in the evenings every weeknight, we're going to have a change, and we won't be with you anymore on this channel. And so I want to just kind of get you used to that idea, because we'll be gone from the Boston market. Now, you can always keep contact with me on the Facebook page, Heartland Nation. Just go to Facebook, type in Heartland Nation, and that's where you'll find me. You can hear podcasts there. There's a link to all the audio right there at your fingertips. And so I hope that you'll kind of stay connected, see what we're doing. And you can see a lot about our church there, Heartland Church, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You can see some of the things that we're involved with, what we're doing, along with Paul and Dan and some of the rest, other Patriot pastors across the country. Well, God bless you. Thanks for tuning in this Tuesday night. We've still got a few more in the month of June before July rolls around. And I don't know what's going to follow us, what they're going to get to follow this act. Quite frankly, I do not know. But whatever it is, I'm sure it'll be good here on WROL. God bless you. We'll see you next Tuesday night right here, 950, The Spirit of Boston.
You can see it in the movies and the paper and the TV news. Somebody's army is always on the move. There's gonna be a battle. The lines have been drawn. They got guns and tanks and planes. The wells are gone dry and the water is bad. And the air is acid rain. There's war after war and rumors of war from the east. There's a rumbling in the ground and they're talking about the beast. Good mother's cry calls the rivers run high with the blood of too many sons. Some people say peace is on the way, but the worst is still to come. 'Cause the prophets wrote about it, and Jesus spoke about it, and John got to take a look. And he told us what he saw, and it's easy to see. It's going by the book. It's going by the book.
listening to the Reclaiming America for Christ radio network on WROL AM 950. At 9 o'clock is the latest news and prophecy with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and Prophecy Today. At 9:15 is Science, Scripture, and Salvation with Dr. Henry Morris. And at 9:30 is the John Ankerberg Show.